The War of Art. Break through the blocks and win your inner creative battles. Author, Stephen Pressfield. The Unlived Life. Most of us have two lives, the life we live and the unlived life within us. Between the two stands resistance. Resistance is the most toxic force on the planet. It is the root of more unhappiness than poverty and disease. To yield to resistance deforms our spirit. It stunts us and makes us less than we are and we're born to be. Resistance defeats us, unless we understand it and learn how to defeat it. The characteristics of resistance. Invisible. It cannot be seen, touched, heard, or smelled, but it can be felt. We experience it as an energy field radiating from our work and potential. It is a repelling force. Its aim is to shove us away, distract us, prevent us from doing our work. Internal. Resistance seems to come from outside ourselves. We locate in spouses, jobs, bosses, kids. Resistance arises from within. It is self-generated and self-perpetuated. The enemy within. Insidious. Resistance will tell you anything to keep you from doing your work. It will perjure, fabricate, falsify, seduce, bully, cajole, protain. It will assume any form, if that's what it takes to deceive you. Implacable. Like the shark in Jaws, it cannot be reasoned with. It is an engine of destruction, programmed from the factory with one object only, to prevent us from doing our work. Impersonal. A force of nature. Though it feels malevolent, resistance in fact operates with the indifference of rain and transits to the heavens by the same laws as the stars. Infallible. Like a magnetized needle floating on a surface of oil, resistance will unfailingly point to true north, meaning that calling or action it most wants to stop us from doing. Universal. We're wrong if we think we're the only ones struggling with resistance. Everyone who has a body experiences resistance. Resistance plays for keeps. Resistance's goal is not to wound or disable. Resistance aims to kill. Its target is the epicenter of our being, our soul, the unique and priceless gift we were put on earth to give, and that no one else has but us. Fueled by fear. Resistance has no strength of its own. Every ounce of juice it possesses comes from us. We feed it with power by our fear of it. Only opposes in one direction. Resistance obstructs movement only from a lower sphere to a higher, most powerful at the finish line. At this point, resistance knows we're about to beat it. It hits the panic button. It marshals one last assault and slams us with everything it's got. Recruits allies. Resistance by definition is self-sabotage, but there's a parallel peril that must also be guarded against, sabotage by others. When a writer begins to overcome his resistance, in other words, when she actually starts to write, she may find that those close to her begin acting strange. They may become moody or sullen. They may accuse the awakening writer of changing, of not being the person she was. The closer these people are to awakening the writer, the more bizarrely they will act and the more emotion they will put behind their actions. They are trying to sabotage her. Resistance symptoms. Procrastination, trouble, self-medication, victimhood, unhappiness, self-doubt, and fear are all indicative of resistance. Let's take a closer look at each of these and additional symptoms that scream resistance. Procrastination. The most pernicious aspect of procrastination is that it can become a habit. We don't just put off our lives today, we put them off till our deathbed. Trouble. Trouble is a faux form of fame. Anything that draws attention to ourselves through pain-free or artificial means is a manifestation of resistance. Self-medication. Stephen Pressfield once worked as a writer for a big New York ad agency. Their boss used to tell them, "Invent a disease. Come up with a disease," he said, "and we can sell the cure." Depression and anxiety may be real, but they can also be resistance. Victimhood. A victim act is a form of passive aggression. The victim compels others to come to his or her rescue, or to behave as he wishes by holding them hostage to the prospect of his own further illness, meltdown, or mental dissolution. Unhappiness. What does resistance feel like? First, unhappiness. A low-grade misery that pervades everything. There's guilt, but we can't put our fingers on the source. We want to go back to bed. We want to get up and party. We feel unloved and unlovable. We hate our lives. We hate ourselves. Unalleviated. resistance mounts to a pitch that becomes unendurable. Criticism. If you find yourself criticizing other people, you're probably doing it out of resistance. When we see others beginning to live their authentic selves, it drives us crazy if we have not lived out our own. Self-doubt. Self-doubt can be an ally. This is because it serves as an indicator of aspiration. It reflects love. Love of something we dream of doing. And desire. Desire to do it. Fear. Fear is good. Like self-doubt, fear is an indicator. Fear tells us what we have to do. Remember this rule of thumb. The more scared we are of work, or calling, the more sure we can be that we have to do it. Love. If you're feeling massive resistance, the good news is, it means there's tremendous love there too. The more resistance you experience, the more important your unmanifested art, project, enterprise is to you. And the more gratification you will feel when you finally do it. Support. The more energy we spend soaking up on support from colleagues and loved ones, the weaker we become and the less capable of handling our own business. Rationalization. It has its own sidekick. It's the part of our psyche that actually believes what rationalization tells us. It's one thing to lie to ourselves. It's another thing to believe it. A professional is patient. Resistance outwits the amateur with the oldest trick in the book. It uses his own enthusiasm against him. Resistance gets us to plunge into a project with an overambitious and unrealistic timetable for its completion. The professional, on the other hand, understands delayed gratification. The professional arms himself with patience, not only to give the stars time to align in his career, but to keep himself from flaming out in each individual work. He knows that any job, whether it's a novel or a kitchen remodel, takes twice as long as he thinks and costs twice as much. He accepts that. He recognizes it as a reality. A professional acts in the face of fear. The amateur believes he must first overcome his fear, then he can do his work. The professional knows that fear can never be overcome. A professional accepts no excuses. The amateur, underestimating resistance's cunning, permits the flu to keep him from his chapters. The professional has learned better. He knows if he caves in today, no matter how plausible the pretext, he'll be twice as likely to cave in tomorrow. A professional is prepared. We're not talking about craft. That goes without saying. The professional is prepared at a deeper level. He's prepared, each day, to confront his own self-sabotage. The professional understands that the field alters every day. His goal is not victory, but to handle himself, his insides, as sturdily and steadily as he can. The professional does not show off. A professional's work has style. It is distinctively his own, but he doesn't let his signature grandstand for him. His style serves the material. He does not impose it as a means of drawing attention to himself. A professional endures adversity. The professional keeps his eye on a donut, and not on the hole. He reminds himself it's better to be in the arena, getting stomped by the bull, than to be up in the stands or out in the parking lot. A professional self-validates. An amateur lets the negative opinion of others unman him. He takes external criticism to heart, allowing it to trump his own belief in himself and his work. Resistance loves this. The professional cannot allow the actions of others to define his reality. Tomorrow morning the critic will be gone, but the writer will still be there facing the blank page. A professional recognizes her limitations. She gets an agent. She gets a lawyer. She gets an accountant. She knows she can only be a professional at one thing. She brings in other pros and treats them with respect. You, Incorporated. If we think of ourselves as a corporation, it gives us a healthy distance on ourselves. We're less subjective. We don't take blows as personally. We're more cold-blooded. We can price our wares more realistically. You're not you anymore. You're you, Inc. You're a pro. Territory versus hierarchy. Most of us define ourselves hierarchically and don't even know it. It's hard not to. School, advertising, the entire materialist culture drills us from birth to define ourselves by others' opinions. Drink this juice, get this job, look this way, and everyone will love you. The gift. Are you a born writer? Were you put on earth to be a painter, a scientist, an apostle of peace? In the end, the question can only be answered by action. Do it or don't do it. It may help to think of it this way. If you are meant to cure cancer, or write a symphony, or crack cold fusion, and you don't do it, you not only hurt yourself, even destroy yourself. You hurt your children. You hurt your fellow humans. You hurt the planet. Creative work is not a selfish act, or a bid for attention on the part of the actor. It's a gift to the world and every being in it. Don't cheat us of your contribution. Give us what you've got.